pre-show. We got pre-show emails. Actually, these might be post-show emails.
Oh.
But hopefully the people who are listening on the post-show also were listening to the pre-show. Gadget Chaser says, I must have eaten at one of the last steak and ales around after they filed for bankruptcy in late 2008. My dad and I ate at one on Oahu in February 2009. It was a throwback for sure. I felt like I was in 1983 during the meal.
Okay.
You weren't here for the steak and ale conversation. I think that might have been Friday.
No. Okay.
Steak and Ale is this old-fashioned chain that is being brought back.
Ooh.
Dining chain. Dinner chain.
Exciting, I guess.
Chris says, I'm catching up on DTNS episodes. I can confirm that Bennigan's in Santa Clara is operating. It's on Great American Parkway, right next to the 101 entrance, and only a couple blocks away from Great America Theme Park. Bennigan's used to be a common after-work hangout for park employees, especially those in the entertainment department where I used to work. They remodeled a couple of years ago, and now it has a more modern theme, I'd say kind of in the same ballpark as Applebee's. Bennigan's is the company that bought the Steak and Ale name and is going to revive them.
Hmm. Applebee's doesn't strike me as modern, but maybe I don't know it well enough.
It's more modern than Bennigan's, but yeah, I know what you're saying. I would not, in out of context, describe it as modern either.
Mm.
Most of those corporate chains generally are, this is the thing. When they start out, their food is pretty good. And then with the years, they just slowly just decline.
They get inertia.
Well, part of it is just, yeah, it's just like, although there's
once
some restaurants
drawn you in, they just, yeah.
Well, there's some restaurants that start off and I never find them to be good. Like Chili's, people love Chili's and I can't stand the place.
I hate to be the French snob.
No, you don't.
No, you don't.
So, you I'm don't. Not going to be. I reflected on what I was going to say and decided that it was probably not the best.
You love nachos.
I do.
And you
okay?
You
one
love,
thing I
you
will
love
say.
The cheese sauce nachos, not the good like cheese nachos.
Well, listen. If I go to America, I'm certainly not going to go there for
That'd be like going to France and buying nachos. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, we don't have the best nachos, but no. I will
yours
say one thing.
Yours are made of brie. It's just weird.
For years, people were telling me, I was saying that, I enjoy a good McDonald's now and then.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of Americans were telling me, oh my God, what?
How,
really?
How
no,
is that possible?
What? How? Yeah. How is...
Right,
and I
right.
didn't understand.
I
was
know where
like,
this is going.
And you probably already guessed that McDonald's is much, much better in France than
it is.
Big Mac's a Big Mac, but you call it love Big Mac.
I'm amazed. For some reason, McDonald's overseas, maybe because the competition is more fierce or something.
Maybe.
But they, like here, it's literally,
it's so greasy and like, I don't know. It's like.
Not even greasy. Everything, at least in the US McDonald's, has a very. Similar aftertaste. Doesn't matter what you eat. You can eat one of their quarter pounders, Big Mac, a shake, or even one of their saucers. They all have that same residual feel in my mouth. That's really gross.
I think it's the grease vapor that infiltrates everything. Seriously, if you ever come to France, have a Royal Deluxe. It's like with a pepper seasoning, pepper sauce. Mm-hmm. It's really good. Like it's actually tasty.
Well,
so,
the McDonald's in London was my first experience with this, where I went to the McDonald's. It was one of the days in 1996. I was on a trip with a friend of mine and we'd gone our separate ways that day. And he would never.
Oh, it was in 1996.
Yeah. He would never have set foot in a McDonald's in London. But I was like, I want to find out, what's it like? Is it different? I had a sausage biscuit because it was breakfast time. Amazing. So much better. Because who does really good sausage in this world? The English. They do freaking good sausage.
It's What's weird, when I had McDonald's in Australia, I thought their burgers were great, but their breakfast items were nasty.
In New Zealand, the McDonald's was serving like entrees in the evening, like veal parmesan and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what you know why? It's because I don't think McDonald's owns those restaurants out. They franchise them out.
Well, they franchise all of them out.
No, in the U.S.
In the U.S., they're all franchises.
No, they aren't. Yeah. Some of them are actually corporate owned.
Okay, not very all, few not of all them not are, all though. The majority of them are franchised.
Well, in France, we have Mac Cafes.
They had those in Australia when I went on my honeymoon. The same when I saw the New Zealand thing. I got fascinated with them. They never really caught on in the U.S. Now they use McCafe here in the regular stores.
Yeah. They created two. One in New York, and I forget where the other restaurant
was. There's one in
was.
San Jose, I think.
Is it? Yeah. And it was a test bed.
Yeah.
But the thing is, in the U.S., there's so much competition in like that fast food niche, that segment that McDonald's occupies, that it's literally cutthroat, which is why
I think the other thing is here, our perception of McDonald's is crap food. And when you have Starbucks, which is considered crap coffee, and then McCafe comes in and tries to compete with Starbucks, then you're like, wait, even worse than Starbucks coffee? No way.
It's just, yeah.
I really like Starbucks coffee.
I don't. I actually like Starbucks. It's not like coffee. I like the design of their cafes, and I like some of their other drinks, but I don't like their. I like a good black coffee, and I just don't like their black coffee.
Right. Well, the thing is, I don't think you go to Starbucks if you're a coffee lover.
Correct.
It's like you go if you want the sweet
half calf mocha whip.
Yeah, which is a genuine. You know, sure. It's a different item, but the thing that. People and I.
It's funny that we're talking about Starbucks because at this very moment, I think my wife is producing something for work involving Starbucks. She's up in Seattle for it. Ooh. I don't know how much else I could say about it. I think that's probably as far as I can go.
Confirmed. Starbucks.
Also, I don't know Twitter. How much more I can say about it because I don't know anything more about it. but you know, it's for work, so. She went to the fountain of Starbucks, the homeland.
Ooh. Exciting.
So exciting. But yeah, you've got me wondering, Roger, how many McDonald's are corporate owned? Because all the ones that I grew up around were all franchised, and that is obviously the history of them.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, whatever. Yeah, I agree.
You weren't even listening.
Carrots are a good food. I agree.
They are.
82% of McDonald's restaurants are owned by franchisees. The company's goal is to have it as 95%, leaving only 5% for the company to run.
That's the other thing. Franchisees, sometimes you just... And I don't know if it's the same overseas, but... In the U.S., franchisees are often sold to new immigrants or new restaurant owners as a sure bet.
Not so much for McDonald's, though. I think you're thinking of other franchises that's maybe true. McDonald's is a different – because they're older with the franchise model, I think they're a little different. Because, when I think of franchises for McDonald's, I think of, like, these Southern Illinois small businessmen.
Yeah. No, I think of the really crappy McDonald's that littered Stockton and all down the Central Valley.
Well, yeah, and that's maybe what's informing our opinions here. What you're saying may be very true for California. Interesting. What I was going to say is so there was those McDonald's, and then the McDonald's in Kauai that I went to had rice and like Asian dishes because they had so many Japanese tourists, and then Hawaiian local food is very Asian influenced as well. And I was like, wow, this is pretty. They had like fried chicken and rice at the McDonald's.
I remember getting their taro pies. Oh, I love them. Those are like, that's like one of the best things I ever got. That was a McDonald's branded item.
Well, the teriyaki burger in Japan is possibly my favorite McDonald's item.
Man, Eileen wouldn't let me go into a McDonald's in Japan.
What?
Or Korea.
Did she feel?
And I never got enough time on my own to go do it. Myself.
Why? It's like a tradition. You have to go try the local McDonald's food.
You know, you're married. You're not like conjoined twins.
Well, I mean, yes, I could have forced the issue, but it just wasn't worth it. She was like, because we were all wanting to eat together. And I was like, let's try a McDonald's. And I was with two other people besides Eileen.
I'm always willing to try something odd.
Yeah.
So I tried Fugu.
Well, they looked at it as not odd. They're like, why would we go there? We can get that at home. I'm like, not that. You can't get that at home. You can't get a Japanese McDonald's at home.
Well, next time.
It would be. I was like, it's like the 7-Eleven. 7-Eleven's not the same, right?
And they didn't. That is the best argument ever.
I know.
Because the 7-Eleven is extremely different.
There's actually a great scene in Master of None Season 2 that just came out on Netflix.
Oh, don't spoil.
This will not spoil any of the plot. Is that okay?
Okay, fine.
There's an Italian woman goes into a drugstore in the U.S. and she gets all like super excited. And Aziz's character, Dev, is just like, okay. And I'm like... That is exactly how I felt at a 7-Eleven in Japan.
That's, I think, one of the things that I loved the most when I first went to Japan was, well, all of the trivial things, but the vending machines. I was like, oh my God, you can buy like warm drinks and cold drinks from the same machine.
Yeah, the hot coffee from the vending machine.
And
that also sells the cold coffee. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they had like, they don't have them anymore, but they had like games where you would need to put the coin in at a specific time or press the button and it would be like a roulette kind of thing.
And you could see any of those, sadly.
Oh, I think they must have outlawed them because it was, you know, basically gambling.
Yeah. I did see Tommy Lee Jones advertising for Boss Coffee, though.
Oh, yeah. He's been doing that for 20 years.
Eileen was the first time she'd been to Japan, she'd seen billboards and commercials. And then when we got there, they weren't there anymore. And she was on the hunt. And we finally, in Kyoto, found a vending machine that had the Tommy Lee Jones thing on it.
You celebrated a little bit.
It was either out of date and hadn't been changed out, or was the beginning of a new campaign. We couldn't figure it out.
Have you seen Lost in Translation?
Of course.
Who hasn't?
In fact, Eileen made me take a picture of her in the window at the Hyatt because we stayed there for a night on purpose.
You did?
Yes. So
did
she could
for
do
our,
that.
For our honeymoon. They must have so many dumb foreigners going going to the barn. But yeah, it was worth it.
Totally. Totally. It's a really nice hotel, too. It's not like it isn't.
Mm-hmm. They had... Oh, maybe we don't have time. Okay, I'll tell you another time.
We save that for the post show.
Okay.
All right. Here we go.
Oh, I need control.
You have it. Don't you? Do you not have it?
Yes, I have it.
Okay.
Hiding.
Here we go.
The Daily Tech News Show is powered by its listeners, not outside organizations. If you get value from the show, consider giving a little back. As little as a dollar a month keeps great tech news and analysis coming your way commercial free. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, May 16th, 2017. I'm Tom Merritt, with me Patrick Beja, and together we will team up to discuss some of the important stuff out there, help you understand the technology world around you, and most importantly, Patrick, help people sound really smart in their meetings at work.
So basically a regular episode of the Daily Tech News Show.
That's right, man. It's all in the day's work. We're here for you. No, it's funny. I don't know how many times I hear people say, I really like Daily Tech News Show because I was in a meeting and I was able to talk about something with intelligence that I would not otherwise have known about. And it really impressed my boss, coworker, friend, et cetera.
Hey, why do you think I listen? It's so
Why do you think Patrick is on the show? Why do you think I do the show? Yeah.
Basically.
No, that's actually true. Let's start with a few tech things you should know. 4K TVs under either the brand Element or Westinghouse with Amazon's Fire TV software built in are available for pre-order on Amazon, as you might expect. 43-inch model sells for $449 on up to $899 for the 65-inch version. But before you get too excited, that's no HDR. They are not HDR capable. They do have Amazon voice services, though, in the included remote.
This is 4K, though, for $449.
HDR, yeah.
Not HDR, okay, but still, it feels like this is, maybe I'm not used to those American prices of yours.
No, this is super cheap, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this is, it's, you know, not big brands, probably brands that can't afford to develop their internal OS to make their TVs super smart, so it makes sense for them to partner with Amazon. Tinder has filed a notice of threatened opposition to the application for a trademark for a competing dating app called Shinder. Shinder was designed by Shed Simov, I guess that's how you pronounce it, and he is the only male available on the platform. He also received a letter from lawyers representing the elevator firm Schindler, requesting he not enter the elevator or escalator market.
Is it bad if I say he made their list?
Yes, that okay, would be bad. That.
But he did get 3 dates, apparently. Stephen Levy has written up a preview of Apple's new campus, which will hold 12,000 employees. Of course, very wistful because this is one of the last big projects that Steve Jobs helped design. Preview appears in Wired with lovely pictures from Dan Winters.
You know, I love Apple. I don't love Apple enough to read, 10,000 words on their office.
Looks very beautiful. I just looked at Dan Winter's pictures mostly. I read a little bit.
Yeah, basically. Mark Gurman and Alex Webb at Bloomberg report their sources say Apple will introduce 3 new laptops at WWDC, including a new MacBook Pro with a Kaby Lake processor.
A lot of rumors of hardware announcements at WWDC this year.
Which is
year.
Unusual, right? Yeah. I don't think they usually introduce hardware.
No, they haven't in a long time.
Yeah. The bigger thing for me is the MacBook Air, which is apparently not being overhauled. It's still the same old MacBook Air, which is much bigger than the new MacBook, and it's not so airy anymore.
Yeah, and they might be getting rid of the iPad mini. They might discontinue that size.
Well, yeah. I understand.
All right, some more top stories. Biz Stone announced on Medium he is returning to Twitter after being asked to do so by Jack Dorsey. Apparently, his role will be being Biz Stone. I'm not making that up. Stone says fellow co-founder Ev Williams even said that Biz Stone is, quote, among the best in the world at being Biz Stone. Among the best in the world. Stone says he's not replacing anyone. His, quote, focus will be to guide the company culture. So they just want him to come back and give Twitter that old black magic that Biz weaves so well.
You know, I don't think you're doing the quote justice here. What he's actually saying is, my top focus will be to guide the company culture, that energy, that feeling.
Ah, that energy.
Now,
that feeling.
Still no sense.
Listen, you man, know, I mean, Biz Stone, I've met Biz. We interviewed him for CNET back in the young days of Twitter. And he and Ev were both very excited about what they had stumbled across. Jack Dorsey bringing him back is a really smart move, especially saying, look, we just want you to kind of wander around and get people excited about Twitter again. I think they really need that.
Yeah, I think they need a little bit more than just that. I think
definitely. It's not the only thing they need.
And I think he could potentially bring something more as well. There could be some direction or some even product, development that he could think about and still inspire. But to be honest, if I had just read this post without any other context or knowledge for the tech industry, I might have thought this is the biggest amount of BS I have ever read, because he says nothing.
It could almost read like a pity move. Like, I went back for a meeting at my old company and my old co-founder is the CEO said, oh, I'll give you a job. But instead, what he should be saying is, I'm coming into Twitter to take care of business.
Ooh, no, he should definitely not say that. No, but I mean, founders returning to a company that has known a lot of success and might be a little bit in a tougher place right now. We've seen that story before, and sometimes it works out. And I'm not only talking about Apple.
Sure.
One person can sometimes make a big difference, and maybe BizStone can be that for Twitter.
Yeah. Who knows what would have happened if Bushnell would have been brought back to Atari?
For example, yeah. Instagram has added 8 face filters, including crowns, animals, and math equations. They can be used in front or back cameras and in any Instagram shooting mode, including boomerang. Instagram users can also add hashtags, hashtag stickers, and use a new rewind video effect and eraser.
Yeah, so I mean, everybody making a big deal about the fact that we constantly see these new features from Instagram that are actually old features from Instagram, borrowed from Snapchat, right?
Snapchat,
they're not they're new to Instagram, but not new to us. I don't get that enthusiastic about it because I see it as a normal maturation of a product line. And I think maybe that's the reason people get so excited is they think of Snapchat as something unique that no one else does. And what Instagram and to a certain extent Facebook Messenger are showing is that this is now a category, not just a unique thing that Snapchat does.
I agree and disagree at the same time. It is true that basically it was Snapchat that was doing it and only Snapchat. And Instagram, it's not like it's the first thing that they're copying from Snapchat. I would say it's easy to forget what Instagram was a few years ago. It was the place you would go to easily share your beautiful pictures made more beautiful by those filters. And I think it's actually turning itself into almost Snapchat. I think it's going after a different audience. Maybe the beautiful pictures audience is already captured and they know that the younger audience wouldn't be enough for them. So they're actually transforming the product in a very profound way to make it appeal to that younger, or, you know, I don't want to qualify it as younger actually, but the Snapchat audience. And it is, again, a deep transformation of what the product is. If you think about it, it's come gradually, but if you think about Instagram just 2 years ago, it was just pictures, and now it's something very different.
Well, I think, and this may be anecdotal, this is anecdotal, this may just be my perception filter, but I don't see as many people writing about Instagram stress since they launched Instagram Stories. There used to be a lot of this angst about having to look perfect on Instagram, and Instagram Stories took the pressure off there. I'd be curious if it's actually lowered their demographic any, if it's pushed into younger folks, or if it's just brought that Snapchat-like lack of pressure to its existing audience, which always has been a little bit older.
I wouldn't know, but it seems to me that these new features attract different people as well. And they're, you know, constantly gaining more users. So there is something that's attracting different people.
Bringing in new people. You're absolutely right. HTC announced its squeezable phone. I don't know why this fascinates me so much. The idea of a squeezable phone. It's not even squeezable in the sense that like the sides don't move. It just senses your pressure. But anyway, 5.5-inch U11 is their new flagship smartphone. Has a 12 megapixel camera with optical stabilization that is now rated 1 point higher than the Google Pixel camera, bundles in Amazon's voice assistant along with its own voice assistant, the HTC Sense Companion and Google Assistant. The phone features Edge Sense that lets you squeeze. If you squeeze short or long, you can do different things. It can perform functions like squeeze to launch the camera, squeeze to take a picture, squeeze to launch the Google Assistant. U11 uses USB-C, so no headphone jack, but it does include a 3.5mm adapter. Phone is available for pre-order now from Sprint in the U.S. It'll be in store June 9th, and an unlocked version is available for pre-order on HTC.com for $649. That will ship in June as well.
Well, first of all, USB-C, no headphone jack. I guess that's notable. But you know why you're excited about that squeezability?
Squeezable phone.
It's because it's actually cool. You know, it's a way of adding a function, a design interaction with the phone that isn't adding more buttons, and that makes complete sense. It is entirely in keeping with the way you use the product.
Maybe.
I think it is. It is, you know, it could be used. Of course, it's not going to be used exactly as a button would, but it could be used really smartly. I'm not sure HTC has enough of a footprint on the Android market to make it completely to fulfill the potential of something like this. But even if you're smiling and I sense that you're disagreeing, I do think that it is a super smart design, technological design thing.
No, I don't disagree with anything. That is actually a very wise and intelligent analysis of the advantage of this Edge Sense from HTC. Why I'm smiling is I don't think that's why I'm attracted to it at all. I think in my mind, it's a squishy phone that just entertains me.
Because
I'm not even disappointed that it's not, because of your cogent analysis, which is like, no, this is a very useful thing here. It's just, you know, the idea of a squishy phone. Maybe someday.
Basically.
Yes.
Disney CEO Bob Iger reportedly told ABC employees Monday that the company is being asked to pay ransom in Bitcoin or an upcoming movie will be leaked online. Disney reportedly does not intend to pay. Deadline reports the movie is Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man Tell No Tales.
So yeah, get it out of your system, folks. The pirates stole pirates and they're threatening to pirate it. I think this is very telling that there's almost no panic about this. Remember, there was the Orange is the New Black leak as well, and almost no one noticed. Even though it hasn't come out on Netflix yet, it does not seem like I see a bunch of people like, have you watched Game of Thrones ahead of time or the premiere of American Gods ahead of time? That might have shook the world a little bit. But I don't, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, no, I actually want to see this on the big screen, right? I mean, I could always wait and download it later. And it's the fifth movie. It's not like it's the first one that I'm dying to see, that I'm willing to go and download it somewhere. And apparently they're going to release it 20 minutes at a time. And it's like they're just tweaking Disney, and Disney doesn't appear to be blinking.
Well, I mean, if it was a Star Wars movie or something like that, yes, that would be a much bigger deal. But even then, you know, it's really interesting that a lot of people don't really care. And yes, you could go and download something. In the case of Orange is the New Black, you could. But it's very telling that it's so easy now to just watch this wherever you can that a lot of people don't even bother, even if they could watch it a few weeks or months in advance.
Yeah.
And again, this is not, again, as you said, Game of Thrones or Star Wars, but still, it's just not a big deal. And those things get pirated the day they come out anyway. So it's not like these things never happen. Yes, maybe they don't get pirated a few days or weeks before, but it's kind of the same thing. I don't think anyone would expect Disney to pay anything in this case.
No, Disney should figure out how to shore up their IT so something like this doesn't happen, I suppose. But I've been saying for years that the best competition for piracy is ease of access. Make it easy for us to get things legally, and we won't bother to go find things in darker channels for the most part. And I think a lot of people, mostly with Orange is the New Black, but even with this, they're like, well, I can either go try to figure out how to get this, or just wait till it comes to Netflix, or just go to the theater and watch it. I think there are things big enough to push us to go and like, oh, you know what? I do want to see Star Wars before it comes out. Sure, I'll go to see that, right? But those are few and far between. Especially, that's the other part of this, is there's so much good content out there. We're not dying for the hot new thing because everything else is so bad. If anything, we all have too much to watch that we're like, I don't want to add another thing to my list.
And I think there's also another element, which is we want to watch it when everyone's watching it.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't feel as fun to go and pirate it and watch it alone and be like, All right, I can't really talk about this to anyone. So
it's like, oh yeah, I didn't watch it. Don't spoil it for me. Please don't talk about it. You're most likely to run into. ZeniMax has filed a lawsuit against Samsung seeking royalties and damages for copyright infringement and use of trade secrets relating to the Gear VR headset. Of course, Gear VR headset made in partnership with Oculus. Earlier this year, ZeniMax won a lawsuit against Oculus for copyright infringement. Oculus was not found guilty of stealing trade secrets in that lawsuit, and Oculus is still pursuing that lawsuit. They haven't given up on appeals yet. There's also the ruling that ZeniMax itself is being sued by former employee and current Oculus employee John Carmack for unpaid acquisition money relating to ZeniMax's acquisition of id Software. So ZeniMax getting sued by Carmack might go to court again with Oculus. They decide to just kind of lash out at Samsung with some deep pockets. I'm a little befuddled by the fact that they would choose to do this now.
Well, I think, you know, with the suit against Oculus, it looked like they were a little bit money hungry. And with this one coming right after, it definitely, I mean, the image I have of ZeniMax now is, you know, a pale, thin-fingered vampires rubbing their hands and going like, we can get more money. I don't know why vampires have that accent.
I thought they'd be like undead pirates or something, given our previous story. But sure.
Oh, yeah, that too. But, you know, when you think about it, they did have a relatively solid case in the case of Oculus. They did win the suits. It's still, you know, being in appealed, but still. So it is also possible that they actually have a solid case and a solid case against Samsung. They did say that the way they describe it, the case against Samsung is a little bit more, it seems more thin. It's basically two people in an office going, you know, having drinks late at night and going like, hey, I have an idea for the mobile version of this. Yes, let's put sketches down on paper. And that's essentially, I might be, you know, changing the story a little bit.
You know, if your case is not ironclad and you don't have a lot of money, going up against Samsung is a tough bet. Maybe they think this can get Samsung to put some pressure on Oculus to settle because Samsung won't want to bother with it. You know, it could be seen as some kind of leverage. Mm. I'm very curious what their strategy is there. Yeah. Hey, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day, you got to check out Daily Tech Headlines. There's three great ways to get it. You can get it on the Anchor app at anchor.fm. Anchor is an excellent app that lets you just listen to a bunch of cool stuff from all kinds of people around the web, and you have control over it. So, for instance, in headlines, you can skip through the headlines as you are interested in them. Go check that out at anchor.fm. You can also get it on the Amazon Echo as your flash briefing or download it as a podcast, of course, at dailytechheadlines.com. All right, for our main discussion today, I want to talk about this leaked letter from the UK's National Data Guardian, Dame Fiona Caldicott. She sent a letter to Professor Stephen Powis. He's the medical director of the Royal Free Hospital in London. And the letter is about Alphabet's DeepMind deal with the National Health Service. DeepMind and National Health Service had a deal to develop an app. The Dame Fiona Caldicott investigation has been part of a wider investigation about whether the deal was legal. And Dame Fiona Caldicott says, no, the reasoning for the deal has an inappropriate legal basis. Sky News obtained the letter, which advises the ongoing investigation from the UK's Information Commissioner's Office. The question that's being investigated is whether DeepMind had the right to handle personally identifiable health data from 1.6 million patients. Now, that sounds awful, especially when you know that DeepMind was bought by Google when it was Google, not Alphabet. And so there's that whole Google part of this, DeepMind rushing to reassure people, we are not sharing any of this data with Google. All we're doing is using it to train this app. But they didn't ask for individual permission from the 1.6 million patients. DeepMind argues it didn't need to, because under UK law, if you're providing direct care, you can use this information because you need to provide medical care. You need to have this information and you don't have to get individual permission. DeepMind says we were providing direct care. We were using this data for a single purpose, to train a medical app called Streams that was being built for the National Health Service, which is in use now, helping doctors identify patients at risk from acute kidney injury. And no one is saying they should stop the app. The app that's out in the wild, everybody's fine with. What they're investigating is, did this deal, did this agreement follow the law? Did the National Health follow the law when they gave DeepMind permission to use this 1.6 million patient records? And it seems to hinge around whether it's direct care. Now, Dame Fiona Caldicott says it was not direct care. I kind of side with her there, but at the same time, I don't think DeepMind used it irresponsibly. They used it strictly to make this app. The worries are that when they have that data, you know, can they be trusted to handle it responsibly and only use it for this app? And that's why the laws are so strict.
It seems like, okay. The direct care thing, I think, is a stretch. I'm not a lawyer, so I couldn't tell you exactly what it implies, but it seems to me that the idea, the spirit of the rule is you share personal medical information with your physician or the person caring for you because they need that information to give you the proper medical attention you require. It's not really, I'm going to use lots of personal information to make a product that is going to benefit people in general.
I need to heal this wound. Hold on. Let me get the records of 1.6 million patients so I can analyze them and figure out the best way to heal your wound. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. I think that's the real problem is this is a situation that doesn't fit the law. The law was written in an entirely different set of circumstances.
Right. However, there is, another problematic thing is, yes, DeepMind might have used it to benefit that specific app that will help a lot of people, apparently, but it also uses it to train its AI, which, as you know, Satya Nadella put it at Build earlier, it was last week, The data is the fuel of AI, and you need a lot of data to do deep learning and machine learning, and that's what allows it to get better. So I suspect, again, I have no direct knowledge of this, but I suspect that all of that data is not being just used for that specific one app, but also to better and further the capabilities of DeepMind as an AI.
Now, I don't know all the details either, but DeepMind says this was used for this app and this app alone. We were providing direct care, and that's why we're relying on that particular argument, is that we didn't use this for anything else. We weren't programming AlphaGo with this data. We were using it simply for streams, and streams alone.
I mean... the little knowledge I have of artificial intelligence, I wouldn't be surprised if the teachings they get from that AI is applied somewhere else.
But
right?
That's different. Betters their understanding. It's one thing to say we used 1.6 million patient records to train Streams, and now Streams is an app that's working, and now we can take Streams and say, hey, something we learned about with Streams, we can apply over here. As long as you're not taking the patient records and putting it on, say, AlphaGo, I don't think you're crossing that boundary.
Yeah, maybe not. But what I was trying to say is it benefits DeepMind in other ways that are also
ultimately. Certainly.
It's not like it was just, oh, we just use the data for Streams. And
but I don't think anyone's concerned about that. I think they're concerned is, are those patient records going to be exposed anywhere else? I think if you asked 1.6 million patients, with some exceptions, I think most of them would say, if all my data was used for was to train Streams and then it was deleted, and nobody at DeepMind ever looked at my data, ever saw my data. It was just run through the processor and then deleted immediately. If I could be sure of that, and it's helping prevent an estimated 40,000 deaths in the UK a year, or at least 25%. They're saying this can help prevent 25% of those 40,000 deaths a year from AKI. Then I'm fine with that. But I don't think big question to say if I'm sure. Because I think that's where people get upset is like, yeah, but how can I be sure? How can I be sure nobody looked at that data? How can I be sure there's not a copy of it sitting around somewhere that they forgot to protect? That's That's why the law is there, not to keep them from using it in this way, but to keep it from being put in a position where it could accidentally or intentionally maliciously be used for something else.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm not 100% sure everyone would say it's okay, or even a majority, but maybe that's how it works on my side of the pond.
I'm saying they could be sure. Like, I'm saying a big thing. Like, if they said all your data is going to be used for, no person will ever see it, but it will help save lives.
I get it.
Most people would be okay with that. But I think most people will also be skeptical that that's possible.
Maybe. But I think, you know, that's a hypothetical, just as it would be a hypothetical that we could even ask those 1.6 million people to give their consent. I mean, if you have a box to tick when you're taking the information, or, you know, a box to tick to say, I don't want it to be used, maybe. But that data is already there, and you're not going to go back and contact everyone and ask them,
your response rate's going to be so low. You're not going to get the big data set that you want.
Which, not only do you want it, but you also need it. And that's, you know, the flip side of the thing we were talking earlier, that you absolutely do need it to make those algorithms capable of, we're not talking about, you know, recognizing kittens in pictures here. We're talking about some potentially very efficient care and prevention products.
Yeah.
And you do need that data. And since you can't really go and ask people for all of their permissions, I don't think it's realistic in this case. What do you do? Do you actually try and make that AI go faster and create the products that can help people faster? Or do you say, you know, the it's just a different kind of, not just expectations, but a different kind of rules that, or way of thinking about it? Because
I think there's a couple things you could do. One is you can make this a standard patient option to say, can my data be used in research, right? Like you say, you're not going to get everybody to do it, but you could start now, and maybe that's like organ donation, right? Maybe that starts enough people thinking about it. But I think more importantly, you establish a much more rigid, or not rigid, but rigorous supervisory system for this kind of data where it can be used without permission. Right now, you have an exception for direct care because people say, oh, well, that makes sense. I shouldn't have to go find out permission for direct care. I think you need a new system. You need a new exception that says, all right, if someone is making an app that is going to only be used for medical purposes and has passed a review that says, yes, this is significant, it can save a lot of lives, then that data can be used by a company under the supervision of this board or whatever that makes sure that data is not being misused. Because I think the weakness here that DeepMind is suffering is not that they did anything wrong or that they did anything bad. It's that no one can be sure what they did, right? You just have to trust them that they didn't do it. And people want more than trust. They want verification when it comes to their medical records.
I think that's reasonable. Just the simplest thing could be to just add another exception, just like the direct care exception, and you have a someone or a committee that oversees it, and in that case you can use it, and you have checks that are put in place. A little bit more administration, but probably. I mean, I'm siding with you because I know the importance of protecting data, but I kind of trust that they're not going to use that data for anything nefarious. And it's terrible, but even if they did, this seems like too important work to be bogged down by. And I can't believe I'm the one saying this, the socialist French guy. But it seems like in this case, administration and rules would slow things down a little bit too much. But
I mean, it's always about not what DeepMind would do, but what would another company that isn't
altruistic do? Okay. In that case, I completely agree.
Okay. We finally found rapprochement across the Atlantic. thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Big Jim wrote in our Slack regarding the rumor from Ben yesterday. Well, it wasn't a rumor. Ben said he noticed a truck headed up towards Redmond with a pilot label and Michigan plates. And he's like, hey, is that some kind of car tech headed to Microsoft? Well, Big Jim says, Pilot Transport is a common carrier across the United States. Highly unlikely that Ford would use them to be sending something up. The pilot doesn't mean autopilot. Most companies register the tractors and trailers in their incorporated state. That's why so many trucks are from Iowa and Oklahoma and Indiana, as those states have large truck fleets based there. But the equipment may only rarely go into that state based on load volume and demand. So just because it had Michigan plates doesn't mean that that truck ever was in Michigan, to be honest. So Big Jim says, sorry to burst a bubble there, but he does work in logistics. So he knows from shipping. So it may not have been anything.
But thank you very much, Big Jim, for ruining it for everyone.
He's saying there's a chance. thank you, Patrick Beja. Of course, as always, where can folks find more about what you're doing online?
How about you go to frenchspin.com and listen to the Phileas Club? It's a show where we get different people from different countries, different cultures, different backgrounds to talk about the news. And last one we did, we had three different French people from three different sides of the political spectrum talk about the most important election in the history of the 21st century.
I'll tell you what, I didn't get a chance to listen to that till after your election, but it's still fascinating because I didn't realize all of this push for the Sixth Republic and the controversy around that. There's so much good information in this episode.
Thank you. Yeah, we tried to do, you know, and when I say the most important one, I say it half in jest because the world was going one way at the end of 2016. And now it looks like it's somewhat shifted direction a little bit. So it is quite important. So, yeah. And Tom liked it. So go check it out at frenchspin.com.
Thanks to everybody who supports the show. Did you ever wonder what we talk about before the show begins? Sometimes it's the news. Sometimes it's food. Sometimes it's something totally different. Today we were talking about the differences between international McDonald's and the ones in the United States. You can find out what we're talking about. Patrons get an exclusive RSS feed that they can add to their favorite podcasting app or just use the Patreon app. To get this exclusive pre-show plus the regular show and the post-show, just support us at any amount at patreon.com/DTNS. Go do it now before you forget. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 2030 UTC at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. We're at facebook.com/dailytechnewsshow and our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. Back with Google I.O. coverage and more with Scott Johnson tomorrow.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
And yes, both Le Big Mac and Royale with cheese were brought up in the pre-show.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Actually, if I may, just correct a small, tiny correction. It wasn't Royale with cheese, which is quarter pounder with cheese. Mm. It was Royale Deluxe.
Oh, that is what you referenced. You're right. We did not actually reference Royale with cheese.
The Royale with cheese. It's very different. They're
different. Okay.
The pepper sauce thing.
Because you wanted the pepper sauce. That's right. I forgot about
exactly.
That.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right.
Showbot.tv.
Thank you for that very important correction.
It is important.
Showbot.tv, showbot.tv. And the lists for titles for the show, UK Minds, Deeply, Deep Mind and Deep. The rest of it. Deep Mind says, trust me, Schindler's List. Twitter gets stoned. Pirates pirate the pirates. Dr. Deep Mind sued for malpractice, but they didn't really do malpractice. It's just, mind the data gap. Get it? Swipe into core, doing business at Twitter. Pirates wants Disney's booty. Pirates of the Pirates of the Caribbean, pirate right. ship leaking, no one cares.
Man, you guys are hot today. We got lots of good stuff in here. Cyber HTC's pirate. New squeeze. There's a whole HTC vein down at the bottom of this thing.
Amazon's 4K fire sale. HTC's main squeeze, HTC's feeling the squeeze literally. HTC's, oh wait, that's another new squeeze. Squeezability, putting the squeeze on phones, easy peasy HTC squeezy.
I like Pirates of the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Pirates became the pirated. Pirates releasing many tales.
Easy peasy HTC squeezy.
I like all of them.
I know, I like too many of them. Okay, go vote. Hurry, hurry, vote. Showbot.tv. Go do it now. Bubble some good ones up to the top before my bubble levelating them. Is done.
Bubble them.
Bubble, bubble, toil and trouble. Fire, burn, and titles bubble.
I put the link in the chat just to make it even easier.
Excellent.
I mean, it was up like 3 minutes.
Here's the problem. Audacity updated recently, and it's really fast at importing now. So it doesn't give me as much time. Tell you what, I will wait to add the title until I edit the ID3 tags. I usually do it in the Audacity export, but this way will give a little more time. Patrick Beja was on the show.
Yes, that's me.
You were on the show. I'm editing the rest of the ID3 tags right now. That's why I'm telling you things you already know. Royale Deluxe. Because I know it entertains you. That's why I do it.
And I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. All right, what do so, we got? What have we got? Pirates of the Pirates of the Caribbean shot to the top. That's interesting. Mm. Yes, your question.
I have a question for our very smart audience.
Okay.
My Core i7, what is it, 49? Wait. Core i7 4790 has idle temperature of around 60 degrees sometimes, 50 degrees to 60, around 50. Sometimes it Fahrenheit. Goes down to 40. No, Celsius.
Celsius. Okay, good. No, that's why.
And I worry that that's too much. Mm-hmm. Under load, it goes up to like 80, sometimes higher. And yeah. I wonder if
it's too much. Start to be able to boil water there.
Yeah. And I have like a really good radiator, like with heat pipes and stuff. And I think I might need to put some thermal paste on there to change it or something, because I think it's too hot. But do you think it's too hot?
Your processor?
Yeah.
Wait, what? Which the model number on it?
4790.
Oh, that's
Core
right.
i7.
Is it a K or not?
It's not a K.
Krug says that's within spec, but he wants to know how old the system is.
It's 3 years old. I think I'm wondering if it's not the Windows install, because I changed the motherboard and CPU and graphics card and everything without reinstalling Windows. So I'm wondering if there aren't some.
Try. Is the side panel easily removable from your case?
Yes.
Try running it without that panel on to see if it drops. Because then you can figure out whether or not it's just there's not enough air moving out of the case, or if there's something actually like with the thermal paste or something on the chip.
Okay.
I have the same chip you do, except it's a K, and I run it with one of those, not thermal take, but,
a tin.
No, it's a thermal, thermal take. It's a thermal take. It's cool gauge. It's a cute. It's like 140 millimeter, radiator with a 140 millimeter fan on it. The only reason I got it, cause it was on sale and I needed something quiet.
All right. Well, you think of that. The titles at the top now are Mind the Data Gap, Pirates of the Pirates of the Caribbean, Easy Peasy HTC Squeezy.
I like that one.
And UK Mines Deeply.
I like anything with Easy Peasy.
Patrick, which one do you like?
Well, I usually like the title to be about the main topic, but I kind of like Pirates of the Pirates of the Caribbean.
See, and I like mine the data gap because it's about the main topic. So I guess the tiebreaker will be the 9 votes that Pirates of the Pirates of the Caribbean gets. Boom.
There you go.
And the others will get honorable mentions.
And is your cooler is a pretty like one of those aftermarket big ones that that you really have to crank down on the chip. Is it a cool? It's not a Cooler Master.
I think it might be a Cooler Master. I can't remember. I never remember if it's a thermal take or a Cooler Master.
I remember my Cooler Master was kind of odd to put on. I had to re-put it on once because it was incredibly.
Because I don't want to have to remove the entire panel every time I do it, so it doesn't actually screw in from the back. It's a plastic thing that you push into the motherboard's screw hole and it clips to it. And so I do worry a little bit that it's not well in place enough. But
screw hole.
That thing.
Oh, it's not an Arctic cooler.
Okay, wait. It is a Cooler Master. Hyper TX3 Evo. It's relatively cheap, but it's enormous.
Hypertech Cooler Evo? Evo? Just
TX3 Evo.
TX3. Ah. Let's see. I haven't seen one of these. Oh, I see. It has little plungers on it. Oh, interesting. So that's a very curious design. You basically don't need a bracket. I haven't used one of these in a while. You just put it together, or you just noticed the high temperatures recently?
No, I think it's been high for a while. It just doesn't, you know, the fan sort of goes crazy every once in a while, and I started using a piece of software that tells you the temperature monitor. There you go.
Krug says 3 years should be fine for the TIM unless the system got really cold at some point.
What's the TIM?
The thermal.
I think the thermal interface material.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
So
maybe it got really cold, and the thermal paste might have
not damaged. Because did you bring it by car into
last year?
Oh, wait a minute. When you moved it, did you take the cooler off or did you leave it on?
I think I left it on.
So what happens, and this is what I was worried about when I moved my PC and I took my cooler off, is with some of the aftermarket coolers, they're kind of heavy, and so they pull a little bit when they get jostled. So you might have to pop it off, clean off the thermal paste, and when you reapply it, just put a dot in the middle, a pea-sized dot. Because when you put it down, the pressure force should spread it all over.
I know. Yeah. So, okay, maybe that might be it. I'm going to try and do that. I need to get some thermal paste and
I mean, you were going to get some for yourself just because you're living in Finland, right? And just cover yourself in it.
Exactly. So I need some anyway. So, yeah, I'm going to do that because I got a new SSD. I figured I'm going to do a Windows reinstall. Maybe I can do everything at the same time.
I had to do that. My machine was acting so wonky. And then I realized it's just because I updated from Windows 7 to 8, like a software update, and then from 8 to 8.1, and then from 8.1 to 10. And it was just so cluttered.
Yeah.
That
for me, it's same thing.
Yeah, my PC wouldn't shut down. Like it would, everything would turn off except the computer was still running. It pissed me off.
But it was, you know, it's been running surprisingly well with Windows 10. I went from 8. This was a Windows 8 install. And as I said, I changed the motherboard, the CPU, the everything, and upgraded to 10. And it still runs, you know, pretty well. Like, this is my production machine. I do everything on it. And it runs okay. So
I'll tell you a really dirty lie. Or not a dirty lie, a dirty thing I did. So one of my the motherboard I originally had in here was an old Core 2 quad, so back from like 2008, and the processor of the board fried, so I had to replace everything. So I got a brand new motherboard, and I got a 4790K, and I didn't do anything with the install. I just plugged everything back in, I turned it on, and I let Windows kind of figure the thing out.
Yeah,
it
was working that's what fine. I did.
It worked fine for 10 months, and then it started getting really fritzy, and then my video card died, and I was like, I'll just reinstall everything.
Yeah, probably needed. But I'm surprised how well it works, given, you know, all of its history. But
Have you been playing Prey?
No, I tried the demo for like half an hour, and it didn't really grab me.
Yeah, it's definitely fine, it's BioShock in space, basically.
Right. Mm. And it is like the beginning is really surprising. They manage that intro pretty well, but still, I was like, oh, okay, you know, I have other things,
other games to play.
Yeah.
So there's an ad for The Last Jedi in Japan that has some red text along the side that's loosely translated as "the most startling truth in Star Wars history will soon be revealed."
Spoiler.
Although the word for truth could also be interpreted as reveal. Well, the most startling reveal in Star Wars history will soon be revealed.
Wait a minute. Is that Mark Hamill reprising his role as Luke Skywalker?
Yeah, maybe that's, I don't think that's very startling though.
I'm gonna go.
All right, Bruce. Yes, we're all gonna go. Thanks everyone for watching.
Bye.
Goodbye. Thermal paste. We miss you all so much. We'll see you tomorrow.
We miss